Howdy-do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Thursday, February 21st, 2019. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Charlotte Henry. Hi, Charlotte.
Hello.
Also with me today, I have Brian Chaffin. Hello, Brian.
I'm good. It's good to be here. Thanks for having me on.
I literally told you not to encourage him.
You did, but I told you. Sometimes I can't help myself. I just need to know what happens.
This is such an insight into working at TMO.
Well,
when we speak to Brian, it can be any voice.
It's true.
It is true. And that's part of why it's fun to talk to Brian, because you never know who you're talking to, if that makes sense. instead of talking to Brian, let's talk about talking to computers, because we've had some interesting news lately about tech companies who build some sort of service, some sort of platform, and then they build an algorithm to help manage that platform or maintain that platform. And then when
we're looking at you, Facebook and Google.
Yes. And when the algorithm, when the algorithm goes off the rails because it did what it was told to do and not what people wanted it to do, then they're just like, oh, dude, sorry.
No, I don't think it's that. It's that computers don't have judgment.
Right. Because it was doing what it was told, not what it was asked, which is sometimes different.
Well, I suppose.
So what's the specific thing that we're talking about here?
So Andrew wrote this up for us.
Yes.
A pedophile ring of some sort was uncovered on YouTube. Mm-hmm. YouTube has removed over 400 channels related to this. Mm-hmm. And it's just astounding to me that 400 channels involved in a pedophile ring could bloody well have existed in the first place. And that, to me, is a testament to the limitation of algorithms to freaking decide everything, man. It's this notion that we can abandon all human oversight in to A, cope with scale, mm-hmm. and B, to cut costs and to make our corporate lives easier is just we're seeing again and again and again the limitations of that approach. Facebook has had its problems. Google has had its problems. Mm-hmm. YouTube has had its problems. Lots of different places have had the problems with letting computers decide what can be done.
Yes.
Like there's the issue with people being led into, like, no matter what you were searching for, you could eventually find, and not even eventually, probably pretty quickly, find your way to ridiculous conspiracy theory videos on YouTube. Mm-hmm. That was a product of YouTube's algorithms.
Yes.
There's been
fake news was exactly, as you might not be surprised to know, given I'm writing a book on this, was exactly the first thing that came to mind when I thought, when we sort of started looking at this in the broader context of what Andrew had written. All these kind of conspiracy theory videos that you're talking about, all of it spreads because we're not having human judgment exercised at the crucial moment.
Right. And to be fair, There's like, how many hours? Let's see if we can get some current numbers here. How many hours YouTube uploads per minute? It's like, it's an insane amount of
ridiculous.
300 hours of videos are uploaded to YouTube every minute.
Wow.
And that's in January. It's a story in January. I don't know if it's accurate, actually. But I've seen similar numbers coming out of YouTube for a very long time.
Yeah.
And the reality is that it is almost impossible for any to economically monitor and process that kind of material. The problem is that was how it was set up in the first place.
Right.
It was designed to do this. The system was designed for people to be able to upload stuff and for there to be no human interaction with deciding what can actually be shown. Right. And while we have free speech in the US, a little less so in the UK and a lot less so in some other places.
Whoa.
Oh, I know. See how I am?
Whoa.
See how I am? The reality is, there are things that every single society does not tolerate or allow. Mm-hmm. Right? And in that, it's humans that are deciding that.
And pedophile rigs are one of them.
Yes. We need humans deciding some things.
Yes.
And interestingly enough, human curation has been the thing that Apple has focused on. It's like Apple seems to have, like, we've always looked at Apple's emphasis on human curation from the standpoint of Apple trying to do a value-added service or something. But I think that Tim Cook and possibly Steve before him and possibly some other executives, I have no idea, but recognized this particular aspect of the limitation of letting computers decide everything.
Right. And, you know, we've seen sort of less directly harmful cases of this. Like, you know, I'm in a band and I uploaded a video of my band playing our song that we wrote, and it's a video of us performing it, and, you know, YouTube flagged it as some sort of copyright violation, you know, and so it won't let me play my, you know, it won't let me post my video of my band playing my song. Yeah, like, we've seen that.
Channels involved in a pedophilia ring.
We're all totally fine. Yeah. So, like, we've seen, you know, less, like, some of those examples are not necessarily directly harmful. Like, that's not hurting somebody, you know, when that one gets automatically flagged by an algorithm. But it's the same thing that is, that is not tuned properly and definitely. Like, I think this is partly, you know, like we talked about not long ago, we had something about YouTube was like fixing objectionable content. Like there were companies that weren't advertising on YouTube for a while and then they thought it got better.
Big companies
like AT&T is the one that I think was in the headline.
Big time advertisers.
Yeah. So AT&T wasn't advertising on YouTube because they couldn't ensure that they weren't having their ads next to videos they didn't want to have their ads next to. And now here we are 400 channels removed later, and you have to wonder about this stuff and where, you know, how, like where it's gonna go from here in this respect, because it's definitely, you know, the like we've talked about, you know, the human curation part of it before. You know, this is part of what makes Apple News different. This is part of what makes the App Store different. This is part of what makes these things a different offering than you get in, you know, from another company that's doing the same thing. And the human curation piece of it makes a difference.
I'm going to throw one other thing in there, because I know you'll probably want to move on shortly, but here's another one. I nearly did this as a kind of link teaser on the site and let it go. But there was a story I saw not so long ago about dating apps, as you know, all very, very run by algorithms.
Yes.
Are they closing off people? And this piece was speculating. I can't remember exactly, so I won't kind of say anything too firm, but basically the idea behind this piece was that actually it's possible that the use of algorithms in things like dating apps are also kind of keeping people enclosed in a box, and it's making people, stopping people meeting other types of people, if you like.
Oh, okay.
Which is an interesting thought.
Yeah. Okay.
Because you know that I guess the algorithms and stuff are based on how you swipe and some of your characteristics and whatever else, and it's kind of keeping everyone in a bit of an echo chamber.
Yeah, I can see that. Because of course it's not going to match you with somebody that has that lists dramatically different views than you.
In this particular case, the algorithm, assuming that is a flip side. There is a flip side to what the algorithms were doing, but that ability to match people based on interests is that's something that computers can uniquely do.
Sure.
Right. So like you could say that prohibiting algorithms from matching people means that people with similar interests could never find each other, right? Like you could turn this particular same criticism on its flip side and find the problem on the other side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Am I making sense?
Yeah. No. People who are perfectly matched up, but main, you know, on paper, if you like, but would never encounter each other. And the romance of an algorithm can bring them together.
Yeah. That's an area where I'm not going to personally heap too much criticisms on tech companies. But this idea of algorithms curating content, we're seeing the limitations of that. I'm not saying it's all bad. I'm not saying it's all bad by any stretch of the imagination. And again, the cost of properly monitoring 300 hours a minute of content, it would be extraordinary. But we're seeing the limitations of offloading that to computers. And we're seeing it again and again and again.
Yes. And it's the same every time. And it's obviously not going away. And so what exactly is to be done about it is probably a topic for another time, and probably a topic for something more like ACM instead of here. So, Brian, when you record that episode, I look forward to listening to it.
All right. Thanks.
In the meantime, I want to talk to you about our sponsors today. Our first sponsor today is Capterra. Capterra is the leading free online resource to help you find the best software solution for your business. Capterra has over 700,000 reviews of software from actual users. You can find anything you're looking for because there's more than 700 categories to choose from so that you can make a very well-informed decision. There's everything available there in great big categories like project management or supply chain management software, down to something really, really particular like legal office billing software or construction accounting. So no matter what kind of software you need for your business, Capterra makes it easy to discover the right solution and fast. So here's what you do. Go to capterra.com/TDO for free today, and you can use Capterra to find the right software for your business. That's CAPTERRA.com/TDO. And our second sponsor today is Edgewise Connect. So, you know, if you're sitting in your driveway and your phone is still on the Wi-Fi in your house, and as you back out of the driveway, you're trying to start up Apple Music or something and it's totally not working, the reason that you're getting something like that, or even better, you hop on like airport Wi-Fi and you're trying to get something done on the airport Wi-Fi and it looks like you have a good connection, but you're not actually able to get anywhere. Edgewise Connect can help you fix that. It will save the day by seamlessly switching you between Wi-Fi hotspots and cellular towers, and will help monitor that signal depending and help get you switched between them so that you're getting the best signal that you can get from where you are. And this helps keep non-hotspots from messing with whatever it is you're trying to do, whether it's voice calls or video streaming or even just your navigation app as you're driving off. It makes all of those things a lot easier to continue to do without interruption. It also helps protect your online privacy. And as an added bonus, they are not just rescuing your internet connection from the edge of disaster. They are rescuing owls from the edge of extinction because they donate 3% of their revenue to organizations dedicated to preservation. So find out more by going to edgewise.app today. That's edgewise.app. Now, our other topic today is that word on the street is, well, I guess word on the Wall Street Journal is that Apple is on the verge of unleashing a credit card into the world with a team up with Goldman Sachs.
Yes. very interesting stuff. It's interesting in a couple of ways. One, it's interesting because Goldman Sachs has never done a credit card before.
Mm-hmm.
From an Apple perspective, it's really interesting because it looks like it's going to include a whole load of features that we might normally associate actually with Apple Health type offerings. Mm-hmm. So the idea is it's going to have things that help you budget, monitor your outgoings, all that, mm-hmm. set target, all that kind of stuff.
So the thing that was interesting...
Like they might use the ring visuals that we have in Apple Health, mm-hmm. to do that.
And what I was interested in reading this was not so much Apple has a credit card, because we've seen that. Apple did used to have a credit card back in the day. It was beautiful, of course, for anyone who doesn't remember the Apple credit card. They were really pretty. And so first of all, like, it's sort of not news on Apple's end. Goldman Sachs has never had a credit card, which to me was a tiny bit of news, only because I just assumed that big enough banks just sort of do all the different banking stuff. And Goldman Sachs has never had a credit card before. So this is a way for them to get a bunch of new customers, because they primarily were a trading firm, securities trading. And so this is them branching out into something a little more consumer-y. And then it sounds like some of the budgeting and those kind of features are going to be just built into the wallet app for the credit Correct. Card, which is something interesting. Now, the thing that was funny when I was reading, there's an article in the Wall Street Journal about this that we linked to over from TMO. And the thing that was interesting to me about that was the person who wrote the journal article talking about how Apple Pay, about how this was going to be good for Apple Pay, because maybe Apple Pay could somehow get more popular, because the way that it was phrased, it was like Apple Pay isn't really doing all that well. Which to me is only entertaining because it seems like we get more stories about Apple Pay rolling out with more different merchants and in more countries all the time. And so I thought that was kind of interesting.
I mean, yesterday I wrote up research that said there's 383 million Apple Pay customers or something crazy. Like, I don't think the issue is that Apple Pay is not doing well. I think the interesting thing from an Apple business perspective is, I have to say, I don't necessarily agree with you that Apple doing a credit card is not news. I think it is interesting. I think it's interesting for two reasons. One, it hasn't done one for a long time.
Right.
Two, this is clearly... which we've talked about a lot on TDO and other Mac Observer podcasts, that this is all part of the Apple services play.
Mm-hmm.
One of the main reasons it looks like Apple wanted to get involved in this project with Goldman Sachs is that it can take a bigger cut of transaction fees.
Right, because they're not the pass-through anymore. They're the issuer.
Correct. So it takes a little bit on Apple Pay transactions. It could take up to 2% with this credit card,
uh-huh.
and possibly more if you use it to buy Apple stuff, which is an interesting.
Now, hold on. That's what it would pay users. That 2% is not what Apple is collecting. It's what.
No, but it's going to collect more as well. Yeah,
it's the kickback. Yeah, Apple would collect. Apple gets less than. One of the allures for retailers and banks to use Apple Pay is that Apple is taking a smaller cut than is normal for a processor.
Mm-hmm.
And as the card issuer, Apple obviously could do could definitely generate more money because people would use this card not just with an Apple Pay, but elsewhere too.
Mm-hmm. Lots of places.
Right. But the really interesting thing, this is a 2%, if it's 2% on most purchases and more for Apple stuff, that would be a pretty big win for consumers. Right now, to my knowledge, the Double Cash card from Citibank has the best consumer kickback system, which mm-hmm. is 2% on everything.
Right.
Yeah. A lot of cards will do up to 5% on some things.
Yeah. In a category.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But 2% on everything is excuse me, is one of the better, if not the best consumer
right.
rewards right now. And this would kick that in by possibly offering more for paying with your Apple stuff.
And not to mention that by and large, if you are buying Apple stuff, you are not spending a small amount of money. So the kickback, if you were to get something extra, you know, on say a new Mac Pro or a new laptop, or even, you know, at this point, like a nicely specced out iPad Pro, like that's no small potatoes that you would be getting back on that. And that's one of the things that's sort of interesting with the cashback stuff.
It keeps you in the Apple ecosystem. I do think it's interesting. We've heard Tim Cook talk about doing a bit more in the finance space, so this kind of makes sense in that context. I think it's interesting, again, that it's this kind of services play. It's too easy for journalists, I think, for all of us to write, oh, Apple just wants to do more services stuff because iPhone sales.
Mm.
And yet it keeps doing more services stuff because iPhone sales.
Well, I think in one way, though, this is just a different approach, because like I said before, like they did have a credit card. There was an Apple credit card that you could get. And basically the point of having the Apple credit card in the first place was so that you could buy a new Apple computer on the regular. And because you got a little bit of a deal and one thing and another by using this card. And so, like, I think that could be just a portion of it, because, you know, one thing that we talk about here occasionally, and one of the measures that I use a lot of the time is how easy it is to give you money if you're a company, right? So, like, one of the first places to support Apple Pay was Starbucks. And why is that? Because you can pay them even faster that way. And they were one of the first to implement Apple Pay within an app so that you could reload your Starbucks card in the Starbucks app, you know, with Apple Pay and do that even faster. And then you can, you know, mobile order. So like Starbucks makes it spectacularly easy for me to give them money. And that's one of the things I think that Apple might is trying to do here, is just making it easier to give them money. So this is one of the ways that you could do that. And part of what's interesting to me about this, because I sort of skipped ahead, you know, in playing this out in my mind, is if they do this and they have this extra functionality available in the wallet app, but only for this card, like that takes the place of a fair number of other apps that are already out there that people can use for tracking spending, tracking budgeting, you know, seeing how all of that looks and being able to look at all of that at a glance, you know, for more than one account. And, you know, more like maybe you have a debit card with your bank account and you have a separate credit card, or maybe you have a couple credit cards, and you can set all of that up in one app and get a look at all of your information all at once. And so I'm curious what the future of Wallet is going to be, the Wallet app. Particularly with regards to this credit card in particular, but then also what kind of stuff is going to be available to other people going forward. So how some of those features are going to be available to other people, or if it's just going to be like, since I can't put everything in Wallet and get that information out of everything in Wallet, then I'm just going to use one of these other things instead. So Brian, when this comes out, are you going to get one?
Yeah, probably.
Okay.
For sure.
I know the thing that's kind of interesting about this is the features that Apple says it looks like Apple will offer. Apple actually hasn't confirmed this, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
But there's banks, particularly here in the UK, and I think you guys have similar stuff over in the US, that are beginning to offer these kind of features on your phone. So Monzo Bank is basically a mobile bank. It's just on your phone. It doesn't have branches. It doesn't really exist. And so that bank, you get cards and stuff like normal, but that, because it's an app, it gives you the ability to set spending budgets, see a summary of all your transactions, get instant notifications,
mm-hmm.
When you commit to do transactions. It obviously works with Apple Pay as well as Google Pay.
Sure.
So people are kind of looking at this stuff anyway. Now, whether Apple can do it better, mm-hmm. who knows? But I think it's not, in terms of the service capabilities offering, not hugely revolutionary, because people, like I say, there's people in the UK already that are doing this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But if it's a bit wider and a bit more mainstream, that I guess that can only be good for consumers, right?
The thing that Apple could do is its integration with other iPhone services. And sure. That's a thing that Apple could do, pardon me, that other parties can't.
Right.
So yeah. This could end up being a big deal. I'm not saying that it will, because I put a lot of stock in this particular report, but it doesn't mean that everything that's in the report is going to actually be released in the market.
Right.
Yeah, that's fair.
Right. But how the effects of this would ripple out into other things, whether it's financial apps or additional functionality in wallet or any of those things, I think would be really interesting, are going to be very interesting to see. And when this credit card is available and Brian gets his hands on one, we will have him back to talk to us all about it. So, Brian, if you do get one, will you come back and tell us what it's like when you in the wallet and all of that?
Oh, no.
Okay. Well, never mind that. Not. Okay. I should have known better.
Of course I will.
I know.
It's a silly question.
I know.
That's the biggest reason I would get it. I have the Double Cash card from Citibank. I do get 2% back on all my purchases and enjoy it.
Yeah. And you don't have to do anything for that. Like, I know a lot of them, you get like 3%, but it's only on one category of purchases, or it changes, you know, quarterly or something. You have to like keep up. So,
yeah. Plus, it turns out, by the way, I pay, I buy a lot of Apple stuff.
What?
So if I can get more than 2% back on my Apple stuff, I'm going to be even more excited. And you know, that's part of this play here. You know, don't forget this is Apple tapping into Apple uh-huh. customers.
Right.
And Apple fans. So, mm-hmm. you know, there's some method to this madness. I imagine that Apple could be quite successful with this particular project.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think it could work out very nicely.
Yeah. Well, when it's released, we will absolutely talk more about it. In the meantime, thank you so much for joining me today, Charlotte.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you for joining me today, Brian.
Yep. Good to be here. Thanks for having us.
I'm glad to have you both here. I've been your host, Kelly Gamott. I will talk to you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.